This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Too much of a good thing is not always great, and that particularly applies to one of West Virginia's favorite fall crops.
The farmer has to decide that it's better to not even harvest that apple at all and just let it go to waste, if you will.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The Charleston and Wheeling areas of West Virginia are among 78 communities nationwide approved for a local federal designation that aims to reduce firearm violence in domestic abuse cases. Maria Young caught up with the state's two U.S. attorneys who will manage the partnership.
The latest figures available on domestic abuse in West Virginia show that most of the incidents that end in death involve guns.
There was 19 domestic violence homicides in 2020. 14 of those 19 were by firearms. Unfortunately, with the firearms, there's usually no walking that back. Usually, highly volatile domestic violence situation, somebody's going to end up dead.
That was Will Thompson, United States Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia.
Not only do we worry about the victims of domestic violence, I worry about my law enforcement partners. Some of the most volatile situations they ever have to encounter while they're on duty is walking in a domestic, not knowing who's going to be armed or not armed.
Thompson will oversee the program in Kanawha County. His counterpart, U.S. Attorney William Ehlenfeld of the Northern District, will handle cases in and around Wheeling in Ohio, Brook, and Hancock counties.
Domestic abusers are some of the most dangerous people in our communities, and the statistics bear that out. Not only dangerous for victims, but also for law enforcement officers who respond to those incidents.
Both men say until now, prosecuting domestic violence has been incredibly challenging. You know, one thing we always hear is that domestic violence cases are so hard to prosecute because often the victims recant or don't choose to pursue. They don't cooperate. Has that been your experience?
That's been my experience, is that, yes, I understand victims are reluctant to testify, and there's a whole lot of psychological studies that will show that. So the whole cycle of domestic violence, if you study that, you're going to see it takes, I hate to say how many incidences has to happen before someone actually leaves or gets help. One of the beauties of prosecuting it this way, we don't have necessarily need the victim's testimony. We just need to be able to prove and to be able to put a gun in the offender's hand. If we can do that, we don't necessarily need the victim to testify.
Ehlenfeld says one benefit to the partnership is the ability to work with state and local law enforcement agencies who respond on the scene and federal prosecutors who can then pursue federal charges with stiffer penalties. Am I correct that typically DV cases are prosecuted at the district level? At the federal level, you have an increased chance of stiffer penalties and more successful prosecutions. Is that kind of what's behind this?
That's right, yeah. Most of the domestic violence cases are charged in state court, and we're talking about misdemeanor domestic battery and domestic assault. We're talking about felony domestic violence. The overwhelming number of those cases are prosecuted at the state level. What we can offer from the federal level is stiffer penalties. We can bring in the FBI. We can bring in the ATF. Domestic violence offender in possession of a firearm, that's a federal felony. Someone who's subject to a protective order and has a firearm, that's a federal felony. Someone who crosses state lines with the intent to engage in domestic violence, that's a federal felony.
Ehlenfeld says by asking a few questions at the scene, officers can increase the odds of a conviction.
We're going to be asking law enforcement agents who are on the front lines who respond to these calls just to ask a few more questions when they respond to the scene. At the time of the incident, the victim is most likely to be willing to talk because it's just happened. You know, they're perhaps suffering from an injury, that the shock hasn't worn off, and police respond to the scene and they ask questions, and even if a gun wasn't used in that particular incident, the police officer can ask the victim, does he have a gun? Where does he keep it? Sometimes we learn that he forced his victim to go and purchase it for him because he's not able to buy a gun. So all of these questions that can be asked at the scene of the crime when the victim is the most cooperative will give us valuable information and intelligence that we can then use to further our investigation. And we won't necessarily have to rely upon the victim anymore.
The Justice Department anticipates additional jurisdictions will be designated for focused attention in the future. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Maria Young in Charleston.
That was Maria Young talking with West Virginia's two U.S. attorneys, Will Thompson and William Elenfeld. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Cloudy today with rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and 80s. Tonight, a chance of rain and thunderstorms, especially in the east, lows in the 50s and 60s. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms possible with highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by WVU College of Creative Arts and Media, presenting Violins of Hope, telling stories of hope, survival, and perseverance, September 30th through October 14th. Information at go.wvu.edu/VOH. Call 1-800-RADIO-87 or pledge at wvpublic.org to pledge your support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Last year, many orchards struggled to find wholesale apple buyers, causing a surplus. Federal dollars helped orchards that were unable to sell their produce. But as Jack Walker reports, the apple market may face longer-term risks.
Fall in West Virginia's eastern panhandle means apple season. All different varieties pile high at farm stands, and splashes of color dot apple trees growing at the roadside. In Harper's Ferry, the season brings visitors from near and far to Reddington's Farm and Orchard, where they can pick their own apples. It's a way to get fresh produce, plus a fun family activity. Owner Tina Reddington says this year her main concern is the weather. In July and August, the eastern panhandle experienced a severe drought. Then the region faced sudden downpours.
We're in a kind of a funky spot where when the storms come through, they kind of go around our farm. And so we've been affected by the drought. So we have less apples than we usually do.
Across the state, local orchards may have a normal season ahead. Or, like Reddington's, they may even be a little behind on apple output. But the situation looks a lot different for larger commercial farms. Think about all the apple products you see in the aisles of a grocery store, from applesauce to apple concentrate. Most of this comes from orchards that produce large quantities of apples specially grown for processing. Many of these orchards are found in West Virginia. And even with this year's weather woes, many of these orchards currently face a surplus.
Imports in the apple ingredient community have greatly diminished the opportunity for the American farmer to sell a perfectly good apple into the apple processing world, right? And this is the most directly impacted the farmers in West Virginia, but they're not alone.
That's Mike Meyer, head of farmer advocacy for FarmLink. To reduce waste and address food insecurity, his nonprofit helps connect farmers experiencing oversupply with food banks and other consumers. Meyer says the country's increased dependence on imported goods reduces sales for American farmers. Plus, apple exports fell during the pandemic and haven't fully recovered. Problems like these in the apple industry aren't new. Last year, tens of millions of pounds in West Virginia-grown apples didn't have an immediate buyer. Many farmers were unsure how to proceed.
But it is fair to say that the apple processing market and those communities has all but disappeared. And what is remaining is of, you know, so little economic value to the farmer that the farmer has to decide if it's better to not even harvest that apple at all and just let it go to waste, if you will.
Then federal assistance helped many orchards out of a tough spot. In 2023, the United States Department of Agriculture purchased $10 million in apples through the Agricultural Adjustment Act. It's a 1935 law that allows the government to subsidize agricultural surpluses. Through nonprofits like FarmLink, apples purchased by the government were then donated to food banks across the Mountain State and beyond. This year, West Virginia will repeat that process. In late August, Senator Joe Manchin announced that the USDA would provide West Virginia growers more than $3 million this year to address the surplus. In Berkeley County, Appalachian Orchard Company has experienced this federal intervention firsthand. Sales team member Christopher Daniel says last year, the business was one of many experiencing apple oversupply.
A lot of them went bad in storage and they lost money on them, and then they haven't been able to recuperate from everything.
But Daniel says federal support saved the season's harvest, and Appalachian Orchard Company is participating in the fund redistribution program again this year.
I think this is going to help a lot of growers who didn't have an outlet at all because they grow primarily processing apples. It's going to give them somewhere to ship their apples where they would have just had to let them fall on the ground.
Still, some state and federal officials worry that supply problems could be a longer-term issue for the industry. Meyer says he doesn't rule that out, but he also says part of the problem is simply knowing where to send the goods. According to the USDA, about 14% of U.S. households faced food insecurity in 2023. Meanwhile, the USDA has also found up to 40% of the nation's food supply goes to waste. That's more than 133 billion pounds of food. Meyer says supporting American farmers and reducing food waste could go hand in hand. It's just a matter of connecting extra produce with people and communities in need.
The other thing about the fresh produce is that fresh produce is a much lower cost alternative to prepared foods to combat food insecurity, right? Fresh produce requires a completely different handling system, right? And so it's not the end-all solution, right? But it can get us a long way there.
And this year, FarmLink will help reroute trade networks once again, packing millions of pounds of apples into trucks for local redistribution. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Jefferson County.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Keelan Bailey, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.
Good morning. This is Eddie Isom. I'm here with Deborah Fernsell. We're in our fall fundraising campaign. We just finished listening to West Virginia Morning. They mentioned the Huntington Bureau. That's been 2 weeks now. 2 weeks old, Randy Yowie. He came back part-time to work with us after he retired, and he is now running our Huntington Bureau. We are glad that we've been able to reestablish a presence there. It's our way of telling West Virginia's story from throughout the state, whether it be from Morgantown, our bureau there. We have bureaus in the Eastern Panhandle, Brianna Heaney. She covers Southern West Virginia. And of course, we have the people here in Charleston who cover the rest of West Virginia. We do that because we know it is important to you to hear stories from throughout the state. If that is something that you appreciate, that you value, consider making a pledge this morning by calling us at 1-800-RADIO-87, 1-800-723-4687, or go to wvpublic.org.